Hello, and welcome to episode 333 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Well, hi. Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So, water cooler listeners, this is going to be a weird one because we're all in moods.
I have to say, the funny way that you say, apparently the funny way I say hello, anytime that like Jason and I are in the car and that Taylor Swift cover of her own song, the one that goes, "Hello, Mr. Perfectly," every time she goes, "Hello," I go, "Hello." Really, I'm not. Like, to the point where I'm sure Jason's like, "Stop fucking doing that."
Is that Mr. Perfectly Fine?
Yeah, that's it. That's on.
I they don't play know the Taylor, that song.
The Taylor Swift aficionado of this group.
Yes. It's the song she wrote about Joe Jonas.
Wait, she covered her. I have not listened to any Taylor Swift.
It's a song
in a while.
It's a song that she wrote for the original album when Fearless came out, but she didn't ever end up recording it or putting it on an album. So it's actually a new song. I mean, it's not a new song. She wrote it 10 years ago, but it's the first time she's fully recorded it.
Okay.
It's called Mr. Perfectly Fine.
Got it. I only listen to Nicki Minaj. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I was trying to say that in the same voice as David Spade whenever he's on SNL, the skit where he's like, "I only watch PBS." It's when Jesus comes back and he like shows up at like a waiting room and he's like, "I'm here. I want to tell everybody." And David Spade's like, "I'm sorry. I don't know who you are." Sorry. This is already a weird podcast.
Yes, it is. And I just realized that this is I don't know if I said it at the top, but sometimes when I go on autopilot, I don't even remember what I say. This is episode 333, which is half of 666.
Three.
Oh, wow. Somebody somewhere is doing some numerology shit right now.
Yeah.
Speaking of albums, I did try to get through the Olivia Rodrigo album, and I decided that I don't like listening to 17-year-old girls complain about how terrible their lives are.
Is that what it is? I
like her voice. I do like her songs, but the lyrics are just like the very first song on the album is like, "I hate everything. I hate the sound of my own voice." I'm like, you're on a TV show and you have a number one album. What is your problem?
What TV show is she on?
High School Musical, the series.
Oh, then that's new, right?
Second last year.
Oh, okay.
That's where she got her big break.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. I just think it's funny how all of these like singers right now all sound like Fiona Apple, and we're not giving them credit.
Yes.
Like they're all doing this like, and nobody's talking about it.
Fiona Apple or Alanis Morissette.
Yes, it's like that's so bizarre to me.
That other song that she sang on Saturday Night Live was
Good For You.
Good For You. That is an Alanis Morissette ripoff. It sounds like Alanis Morissette.
Now I'm gonna have to go listen to this.
Anyway.
I like that song. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like
it. It wore me down.
I like Driver's License, but anyway, I just can't take
it.
I like them individually. I just can't listen to the whole thing all at once. But I probably shouldn't. I am 45, so almost 46.
You can listen to whatever you want.
I give myself Taylor Swift, but after that, that's about it. I deleted the album off of my phone, and my daughter was like, an audible gasp from the back of the car when she asked me to put it on. I was like, "I'm sorry, I deleted it. Now you're going to listen to the Bee Gees." She's like, "No, no, not at all." That I highly recommend that documentary about them. It's very good.
My mom knows. I've always said that I'm the fourth Bee Gee. That's always been the running joke in my family, because I once did the entire Saturday Night Live soundtrack on Christmas Day with a kazoo and like also sang along to it too. But my mom got me the complete story of the Bee Gees, like a magazine, knowing how much I love the Bee Gees. So I really do need to watch that documentary, and because I'm just obsessed with them.
Well, I ended up interviewing Frank Marshall, who directed it, and it was a really good conversation.
That's great.
Yeah. Two really great music documentaries, actually. I, and I in the next 2 weeks, have interviews forthcoming for both directors, Frank Marshall for the Bee Gees documentary and the duo who directed the Tina documentary.
I need to see both of those. I've got the the true crime section of documentaries covered.
Well, that Tina documentary is the Tina of the documentary is the better of the two, although they're both very good. But the Tina documentary, I think, is kind of a revelation in that it gives you a window into what happened in her life after the movie stops, essentially, which I told them I really wanted them to now go into narrative features and to make a sequel to What's Love Got to Do With It, starring Angela Bassett as the adult, the older Tina Turner, post What's Love Got to Do With It. Call it simply the best.
Oh my God, I love that.
Win her the Oscar, please.
Yes.
Anyway, I think we've babbled enough. Yeah, this is a weird one. So we're going to cover two things today. We are going to cover very quickly this weekend's BAFTA Awards. And we know that there's been a lot of conversation on Twitter from people who are tracking the Emmy race that are looking for that kind of blow-by-blow award ceremony coverage that of the Emmys that happens with the Oscar race. Guess what? It doesn't happen that way. But we're going to talk about a lot of conversation that's happened around The Crown being shut out of the BAFTAs. But we'll spend just a few minutes on that. But the bulk of the podcast is talking about Lizzie's Story, the new limited series, the first major thing to air in the 2022 Emmy season, which stars Julianne Moore, written by Stephen King, directed by Pablo Larraine. So given all of that big budget, big name talent, does the series follow through? Is it a story worth telling, as I have titled in the podcast post? After that, we will close with the flash forward to the media that we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. You guys ready?
Yeah.
All
right. So let's start with what happened this weekend at the BAFTAs. So the BAFTAs, I'll just cue us up very quickly. The BAFTAs did have their TV awards this weekend. And the big news came out of that, as I've mentioned already, was the fact that The Crown went home empty-handed. Joey, you pinged me on Sunday. You're like, The Crown shut out. And I'm like, it's not that surprising, though, because The Crown has never been big at the BAFTAs.
Yeah. I looked it up because I was like, that it doesn't seem like it's, you know, you think BAFTA, you think The Crown, like, of course they're going to do it. But they BAFTA has never really gone for The Crown in any of the years that it has been on television. So the only major, like, above-the-line award that it won was for the second season. And that was for, of all things, it was Vanessa Kirby for supporting actress for the second season. That, like, Claire Foy didn't win, John Lithgow never won. Like, last season, like, Josh O'Connor, Helena Bonham Carter never won. Like, Olivia Colman wasn't even nominated last year or this year. It's won some crafts. It's won, I think, it's won four other crafts, like costumes and I think, like, something weird that I remember, like, lighting that we stuff like that. But it's never been a huge player. But then, like, you know, the thing that Clarence always says is you can't sort of look at the trajectory of a contender through several television ceremonies like you do the Oscars. You can't do that because that the calendar is wonky and stuff is eligible some years and, you know, other years they're not. For TV, you can't, like, build an awards consensus like you do for movies that you do for television. So I saw a lot of people but a good amount of people, like, oh my God, what does this mean? Like, for its Emmy chances, like, shut the fuck up. It's fine. Like, it just, I feel like maybe, I don't know, because I'm not from England, maybe they sort of just look at it as like, oh, that's like, you know, oh, it's the Netflix thing. Oh, it's like too, you know, it's not gritty enough. It's like, who wants to hear about the Royals again? They award much different stuff. And the BAFTAs, you know, their categories, especially their performances, they're all mixed together. Like, they're all, there's not like actor in a supporting role in a limited series. It's not like that. It's like best actor, best actress, supporting, like, female and male comedy performance. So if anything, that I would say the biggest takeaway is that from these winners, people are super excited for
I May Destroy You.
From I May Destroy You, 1-2, Small Axe won a couple. you know, I feel like the people are really mostly excited about performances from limited series or TV movies or stuff like that. So, because like Best Actor and Actress went to Paul Mescal for Normal People, Michaela Cole for I May Destroy You, and then Supporting went to Malachi Kirby for Actor for Small Axe, which is a good win because he's really good in that. And Supporting Actress went to an actress from The Murder. Sorry, my dog is coughing in the background. Oh, no.
Aww.
Reiki Iola for Anthony, which I've never heard of. I would like to check that out. So, I don't know.
How do you think that this helps? Do you think this helps I May Destroy You at all, though?
I hope so.
I think it does. I mean, I think it's so the Crown can't, I don't think the Crown can be hurt, and we can get into that in a second, but I do think winning something, even though losing doesn't hurt the Crown, winning helps something like I May Destroy You, because it did so well. Like, it won multiple awards. Yeah.
Writer.
Yeah.
She won writer. Mm-hmm. It won series, right? A limited series, or did they have a limited series?
Yeah, best
minute. It won editing. Yeah. She won lead actress.
Yeah.
Director.
So it gives them, it gives HBO something to put in their campaign, right?
As yeah. I said,
like, you know, yeah.
Four-time BAFTA winner, you know, that kind of thing. And that'll carry some weight for sure. And there is probably some overlap between BAFTA TV and the Emmys in terms of the British contingent. So I think it definitely helps that for sure.
I mean, there's like just going to the previous year, I mean, the last ceremony they had for 2020. I mean, this was after it happened in America, like Chernobyl won miniseries. I'm just looking at that, but I don't think that's necessarily a correlation there. But, you know.
Yeah. But talking about The Crown, I mean, The Crown is always, I almost think that they, even though it is a predominantly British production, overwhelmingly British production, British cast, British filmmakers, British crafts, I wonder if they just still consider, because it doesn't air on BBC or something like that, that they consider it more of an American enterprise or American object of fascination, not a British object of fascination.
Like, I would probably think
that's that big of a deal. Yeah. Because they live that stuff every day. We're just like, you know, we don't have royalty. So, you know, it's like catnip to us. But And I would also argue, what's going to beat it? If you think that The Crown is weak at drama series 2021 for the Emmys, what is going to beat it? Is it going to be Mandalorian? Is it going to be Handmaid's Tale again? Bridgerton? Pose? I mean,
this isn't great. Like, you should not look at The Crown losing stuff sort of the same way how, I mean, we just talked about it, like, what, last week or the week before, about how limited series might be shifting because of new contenders being, you know, pushed out into the fold or being the talk of the town, like Mare of Easttown is the Queen's Gambit, you know, in, you know, trouble after its insanely impressive, and some may say excessive guild run. Like, is it not going to win anything now? Like, there's nothing like that standing in The Crown's way. I feel like The Crown is just, so by this point, it's a foregone conclusion, and it's not like it's just going to win drama series. It's probably going to win a butt ton of Emmys, which I hope that is the technical term for the amount of Emmys that it wins. But a ton.
Well, it's at least going, it's guaranteed to win supporting actors. You know, I think it's strong all over the place. So it, this is going to be the year for The Crown. I think this is its fourth season. It's never won series. It's won supporting actor. It's won actress once. It's won a handful of crafts. But this is going to be the year where they go all in for it. They finally feel like they can recognize it, because it is the season, as we've mentioned several times, it's the season where you can just jump right into it.
Yeah. I will say that something that I've always thought, just as like a side note for that, I was like, good luck to season 5 of The Crown.
Yeah, I know. Oof.
Uphill battle.
Plus, I think with all this publicity going on right now with the with Harry and his new kid and naming it after Diana, and then that whole horrible treatment, how he says, you know, that he feels like Meghan, you know, it's like Diana all over again. And then you get to the Crown season 4, which pretty much shows the royal family as just a horrible set of people who treated her terribly. you know, it's keeping it in the conversation.
I did, just as a side note, I spoke to randomly Michelle Buteau yesterday. I did an interview with her, coming soon to Awards Daily TV, about her special. And in her comedy special, she says that for one thing that she wishes for, she wish that she could let herself go so Michelle Buteau could play her in The Crown. And I said something, I was like, oh, your comedy special, like, talked about a lot of stuff that we're talking about now, like Brad and, or Ben and Ben, and I brought up Meghan Markle, and she was just like, oh, she's like, they named her Lilibet. I kind of wish they named her like Chantal or Ray with a weird spelling, just to just to get the reaction. I was like, that would have been great. So she was a lot of fun to talk to. Again, coming soon to Worst Day of the TV.
Shameless plug. You read that like you're the Micro Machines guy.
Yeah.
There's a whole probably group of listeners who have no idea what Micro Machines are.
Oh my God.
I know, we're old. All right.
How dare you?
I'm going to now seg the ownership of this podcast over to Joey so that he can tell us about our next topic, which is Lizzie's story on Apple TV Plus. Joey, cue us up.
Sure. So Lizzie's story is an 8-part limited series released by Apple. It is based on the 2006 novel of the same name by Stephen King. He wrote the entire miniseries. It is actually one of his own favorite books. The whole series is directed by Pablo Larraín, which is probably most famously he directed Jackie. Should have gotten that other part by the second Oscar, but that's another conversation. It is about Julianne Moore plays Lizzie Landon. She is a woman who is married to a very famous novelist played by Clive Owen. His name is Scott. The story bounces back and forth between before Scott dies and talks about their marriage. I guess it's not a spoiler. He dies in the show. And then it sort of bounces back and forth to seeing their kind of like their courtship and kind of seeing their marriage and their relationship. And then it is also sort of a tale about grief, and she is getting stalked by a really obsessed fan named Jim Dooley, played by Dane DeHaan. It should have been Evan Peters, but he obviously said no.
He had to do Mare.
He had to do Mare East Town.
Got a hoagie? he was too busy. He went over to the Wawa to buy a hoagie.
How would Mare say Jim Dooley? Because that's his name.
Jim Dooley?
She said Jim Dooley. She'd say fucking Jim Dooley.
That sounds kind of Irish.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, Dooley is Irish, kind of.
Dooley.
Yeah.
Dooley.
I'm just going to do my vape pen. Dooley.
So it's sort of about. So basically, Scott has a bunch of unpublished works, and Ron Stevens Jones plays this guy. He's this professor who really wants his works, but she's just like, fuck, don't get away from me. And he kind of hires this guy, Dane DeHaan, who will sort of stop at nothing to sort of make Lizzie's life a living hell. And Lizzie's also dealing with, she has two sisters, Jennifer Jason Leigh, who I feel like is just taking thankless parts at this point, and Joan Allen, who has mental health issues, and she's so there's a lot in this show, and I kind of wish I haven't read anything by Stephen King. My husband is a very big Stephen King fan, so he was very excited to watch the show, and I don't dislike it as much as you two do. I just feel like there is a good story in there, but I don't know. I think they need to like move shit out of the way. If it was just a story about Julianne Moore dealing with grief and dealing with some flashbacks in her, if it was a little bit more like a Mare of Easttown dealing with some emotional turmoil, I feel like that would be way more interesting.
Something has to be way more interesting than what they have presented. it's awful. I think it's awful. Like I only made it like one episode and a quarter of another one. So I will fully admit that I have not watched the entire show. So it could be transcendent in episode 3 through 8. That's entirely possible. Guess what? I will never know because I'm not going to get past the second episode because I found one scene so insulting to my intelligence that I literally will not give it the time of day. And I will talk about that in a second. I feel like the problem with this is that this is Stephen King's favorite of his own novels and that Stephen King doesn't know how to kill his darlings in terms of telling the story. I think he's trying to throw everything in that novel and a lot of Stephen King stuff is just not knowable. It's not cinematic. It doesn't make a lot of sense. The first 10 minutes of this thing was so fucking pretentious. I'm like, I'm mind boggled with all of that swoony water music.
Yes, and it was just like swirling camera move. Like the camera was just all over the place.
And you said it's not a spoiler that he dies. Yes, he dies like 8 times in the pilot.
Yeah, he does die. And I also think it's funny that she goes, Scott, he has a gun. Like, I just feel like that's a weird thing to say to somebody. I don't know why. It just struck me that I've never heard a character say, Scott, he has a gun. As the guy, he's looking at the guy who has the gun. Like, it just seemed very weird.
The only thing that I wish from this show is
it didn't exist.
I wish.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm probably just way too blinded for my love of Julianne Moore. The only thing that I wish would come out of this is I want a Julianne Moore action figure with a shovel. That's all I want. Like with a little action where you press the back and she like swings it or something. That's all I want.
So. Go ahead, Megan.
I think that, like, there's, you know, this has potential to, like, based on the cast, based on, you know, it should be so much more entertaining than what it, and maybe it's just, I don't know, the Dane DeHaan stuff kind of, first of all, when I was looking up what, you know, watching the show, I'm like, what is this about? I could not get a clear description. I think I saw that Wikipedia was like, oh, it's about a woman who's looking back at the death of her husband and how she might have missed some things that time, like during that time, like her a nightmare where she's like remembering things as it comes back. Then, like IMDb is like, oh, it's about a former like a fan, obsessed fan who's stalking her and her husband. So I'm just like, oh, is that what this is about? Like I read that and thought, oh, that's what this is about. Because they set it up toward the end that's, you know, that Dane DeHaan is you know, more important than what we, like, maybe, because he doesn't really appear until maybe halfway in the first episode. But, I mean, there's so many good elements here. I did not recognize Joan Allen. Mm. I feel like they're already underutilizing her. Mm-hmm. And, like, the crazy, you know, just, like, I mean, she can't get over a breakup. Is that what it is? And then, and so she's gone crazy. And then, whenever there's a flashback of Clive Owen who tries to kiss her, and then all of this water
is
exchanged between them. That's where I was kind of like, okay, I have no idea what's going on. Like, and I kind of zoned out after that and was like on my phone trying to find out more about this. And then I went down rabbit holes of like, well, what's Jennifer Jason Leigh? What movies is she doing? You know. But I had no idea. I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. You only watched one episode, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Just one.
Given that, I would like for you to tell me if you think that any woman in this show character does what a woman would do in these situations.
I thought that like the Joan Allen character was weird. Like, and I didn't know whether that was something, well, they kept saying, oh, it's happening again. And I didn't know if this is something that she does with breakups or something. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to know them enough, but, I just felt like, what am I? I feel like it needs to be grounded. I think that's what I kept looking for. And even in those opening minutes, I'm like, is this what it's going to be like the whole time? Where it's just like the camera is swirling and everything feels like a dream. And then she wakes up because it was a dream. But I'm like, but was it a dream? Like, is that like it's not clear on what the parameters are, what is the boundaries are with this world, I feel right. like. And so that's why I never really knew what I was watching.
Yeah, and I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
There is like some stuff where like I feel like I get into some of the things that are going on, but then all of a sudden, like, there's an overhead shot of the pool, and there's, like, something in the pool. I was like, but what is it? And then there's, like, the scene where in episode two, there's, like a essentially, like, a world where, like, Joan Allen goes, or there's, like a shore, and people, there's, like, steps there, and there's people shrouded in things, and I don't know. It's I'm not sure that as much as I enjoy the cast, how much I'm willing to buy into a possible mythology of a show.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, you know, I understand that they don't want to reveal everything in the first episode. They don't want to explain everything. It's a mystery, right? I mean, this has whole blood, his whole Bool world or whatever that he calls it, that he goes to Clive Owen. The other dimension, whatever you want to call it, I understand that that's not something that gets revealed immediately, but you have to make us care about the characters to be able to sustain a mythology. And I think that's my main problem, is that I don't, like, Julianne Moore is just, she is only defined by her grief. Joan Allen is defined by her insanity. Jennifer Jason Leigh is defined by boringness. I mean, she's just
being there.
Yeah, it's just like she was in Women in the Window. She just shows up and does irrational, weird things. I don't care. And then Dane DeHaan is giving a performance, not even of this planet, let alone from the show. I can't. There's not enough character there. And you know, Stephen King writes great characters. Stephen King maybe not writes great characters in a screenplay, but he does write strong characters in his novel. It just needed, I think, somebody else's touch to be able to cut through his mythology and bring us to something that we can grab onto so that we can then endure the mythology.
It kind of reminded me, though, of like Twin Peaks-esque. Like, I felt like it was trying to do a lot of Twin Peaks type of things, and which is, I don't know, some of the things that I haven't watched a ton of David Lynch, but I know that, like, it's hard. Like, it's hard to watch some of it. So I felt like that's what they were kind of trying to do here, but I don't know. I just felt like there was nothing to hold on to. And like I said, I found it weird that even when a person is pointing a gun at her husband, she says, "He's Scott, he's pointing a gun." Like, it's just weird. It's just like, who says that? Like, the way you were saying, like, what women act like that. I'm like, who says that? Yeah. Instead of being like, "Scott!" You know, that's more of a gut reaction. Not, "Scott, he has a gun. He's pointing a gun at you."
Well, if I cared more, I would ask, you know, do we go back? Is it all through her perspective? Is she all remembering it in this haze kind of thing, you know, where she's just almost like sleepwalking through it?
Right. And I don't know. But then according to Wikipedia, she's supposed to be remembering more about it as it goes along. So.
Oh, my God. Not again.
Yeah.
I feel it's like the Zapruder film. We've seen that already like 85 times. Also, every angle.
Right. Oh, no. You're absolutely right. I also laughed at, like, Peter Scolari plays her dad and he's 5 years older than her. I thought that was funny, that was too. I was like, wait a minute. Because, like, I was like, what? And I know that's probably, like, her in a flashback, younger. But it's, you know, because it's such a weird world, it's like, well, when was this?
Yeah, there's no
was
way.
Was this yesterday?
Yeah, there's no way that Peter Scolari played Joan Allen's father, that's for sure.
Right. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
So the piece that made me, I got into the second episode. I got through the first one. I started watching the second one. And there's a scene in which she is remembering, Lizzie is remembering, when Scott sold his first novel. And he got like $2,500 or whatever, $2,400. And she was getting dressed up to go out and celebrate with him. He went and celebrated with somebody else, got drunk, came back. She's pissed at him. So he goes into this catatonic state where he walks down the street and he punches a plate glass window several times and cuts his arm because he's a cutter. He cuts his arm and he comes back and he says, "This is my apology to you. This is my blood bull." And he just keeps, you know, she's like freaking out. And she's like, "We got to take you to the ER because he's severed veins in his arm. He's blood's pouring out of his arm."
Yeah, blood is
everywhere. Like, and he's just keep watching it. He's like, "You have to accept the apology. Will you accept the apology?" She's like, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Accept the apology." Finally, she goes, "Yes, I accept the apology." Cut to them laying in bed, canoodling, and him saying, you know, we should get married. And she's like, yep, you're right, we should. And I'm like, fuck this. No way does this make any sense at all. No woman would ever say that. Like, this guy just literally sliced his arm open. She's going to be like, that's marrying material right there.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's why I was like, turn it off. Nope, I'm done. This is they're just going to build any kind of scene that they want to fit whatever narrative they want. And it's not going to make any kind of logical sense.
It made me wonder if, like, do you think that this cast just signed on to it? It's like, oh, Stephen King? Sure.
And Pablo Larraín? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly what happened. Then they got the screenplay and they're like, so I'm going to crush a teacup in my hands and stare at the camera for 5 minutes?
I didn't understand. And, like, that was almost funny. Like, and it's Joan Allen who's, like, you know, awesome. But I didn't recognize her at first. I thought it was, like, Mary Kay Place. I was like, who is this? Like, I cannot. I know it's got to be somebody big. And but they didn't do any close-ups or anything. And then they just made her seem like the crazy old woman in a B movie.
Yeah. So anyway, not going to finish it. Probably not going to be on my top five of the year list. But yeah, there you go. Joey, do you want to say anything else?
No.
Yeah.
No. I'll just keep watching it for Julian Moore, but I'm going to be like watching it like, okay.
I think there's probably a very interesting story there. I just don't know. The way it's being told is just very, it's very hard to get into.
I kind of wish that they did more, like, if they're going to, like, lean into, I wish they, there wasn't sort of the, like, you know, grief story and the craziness. I was just, if it's just Julianne Moore and Joan Allen, like, full tilt Stephen King crazy, let's do that. Like, put Julianne Moore in it. Let's do that. I watched the shit out of that.
Let's do a mini-series of Dolores Claiborne. And Joan Allen plays the old lady part, and Julianne Moore is Dolores. And Jennifer Jason Leigh can play the daughter again. I love that movie, by the way.
I remember you made us watch it. I loved watching it.
So great. I also want to see Pablo Larraín's Jack A, the story of Jack A. Harry.
Oh, I would watch that. I'm so meditative. I would too. First of all, I would watch anything that Jack A is in. I'm actually a little surprised that Jack A has she did a guest spot on Pose this season. And I think there are a lot of guest performers that should get in for that. And she's one of the only ones that they are pushing. Well, at least that's on the FYC site for FX, which is surprising me a little bit, but all right.
All right.
Yeah, she's great.
She is great. So let's move off to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And who would like to go first?
I will. I'm really looking forward to Starstruck on HBO Max. It looks like sort of a reversed roles Notting Hill about a girl who sleeps with she has a one-night stand with a super famous movie star. It looks really cute. It's getting really great reviews. I may, even though it comes out in like 2 days, I may bug. I was like, hi, HBO, nice screeners, thanks. And then I am super excited to watch In the Heights. I'm so amped to see that movie in a theater with a whole bunch of people who are excited to go out to celebrate a story that we don't necessarily see on screen a lot. And it's a fucking musical. So I'm so excited to see a musical on the big screen again.
It's a fucking musical that got a rave from Sasha.
Wow.
Yeah,
she loved
it. Yeah, did you see
it? And that? I know, yeah, I need to finish reading it, but I know, I don't think, I maybe speak, but I'm not, I don't think musicals are Sasha's bag.
No.
Maybe like when they're musicals that are done in a different way, like traditional musicals, I don't think she really likes, but I'm glad that she responded to this one.
Yeah, she likes Chicago. She loves Hamilton and this. Excellent. Was that everything for you? Yes.
Joey?
Yes.
Joey? Okay.
Correct.
I thought we lost it first.
Yeah, I did too.
Wait, so am I going next?
Yes.
Okay. You know, what's funny is that I have not been looking forward to In the Heights, but because Sasha likes it, now I'm intrigued because I don't know. I just differ. I'm not a Hamilton fan. And I feel like this is a hyped up movie, but if Sasha's in, I'm in now. I probably need to catch up on some shows that I probably will be covering. So I'll probably be doing that. But I need to watch Hacks. Everybody's been telling me about Hacks. I need to help my dad figure out how to watch Chernobyl because he's trying to catch up on that. And my mom is away right now, so she has no – he's like, how do I get this? And I'm like, well, you could download the HBO Max app. He's like, I don't want to do that. So I got to help him do that.
I don't think there's any other way to do it.
I know. He's like, I watched the first episode on demand, but it was – they didn't have any other ones, so I felt really bad. Yeah, I mean, what you described, Joey, I need to catch up on RuPaul's Drag Race and Down Under. I need to
to talk about that.
Oh, I heard that some people were upset.
It's kind of a snooze.
Okay. But yeah, that's probably about it. Just catching up and on shows for interviews, and that's probably about it.
I today finished the Mike Nichols book by Mark Harris.
Oh, that's great.
And I cried at the end because the last I'm on a walk and I'm choking back tears because it's very touching at the end. Talking about like how he was not ready to die. But he could not, he physically didn't have the stamina to direct, and that he had, you know, his last film was Charlie Wilson's War. And that did not go well. And that was kind of the beginning of the end. Of course, he did win another Tony for Death of a Salesman in 2012. But it was very sad. The descriptions of his last few days. And I was just very touched by the end. So now I'm looking for another book, hopefully one less sad. I need to watch Master of None, which is premiered on Netflix a couple of weeks ago. Crickets. For a series of interviews I have to do. I'm also going to be super excited about In the Heights, which is something I have also been dreading. And now that Sasha has said it's great, I'm like, okay, then I must watch.
Okay, I feel better about that.
I'm like super down with the I'm really taking the whole time of like
Joey, your internet has crapped out, so I'm gonna ask you to text us what you're saying so that I can repeat that to our listeners, because I can't tell what you just said unless you can, Megan.
No, I couldn't. Are you there, Joey?
Yeah.
Oh,
we can't hear you.
Oh.
Okay. We can hear you better now. You were talking before.
Oh yeah. Okay, I'll talk really fast. I every time I see the trailer, I am really taken with like the colors and the bigness of like a lot of the group numbers. I'm not the biggest fan of In the Heights because I had a really weird experience with somebody who's really annoying, and I haven't revisited the show since then. But I like Lin-Manuel Miranda's style, and I love Anthony Ramos. If you haven't seen some of his movie work, you're not really a fan of Anthony Ramos, people, so get on some of those weird movies that he did. So that's it.
I had In Treatment on the other day before Mare started. Yeah. And he's got some intense stuff. He's having quite a moment, which I think In Treatment might be an underrated one that's going to sneak in for Emmys, maybe.
He was in our tracker at one point.
Yeah. I think
he's in there. He's number five.
Supporting or guest?
He's supporting, according to Joel. Okay.
And Uzo's probably going to get in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There's not a lot of contenders for actors.
Right. Oh, I did want to say one more thing. I am want to do a quick plug for this podcast called The Springfield 3, that Anne Roderick Jones is she's narrating and producing, and it's about Springfield 3. Well, like these three women disappeared in 1992, and it's really fascinating. And I might be doing something about it in the future, but it's really great. And you should give it a listen.
And the last thing I wanted to say was that if you subscribe, I'm not even sure what this is, but AMC Plus is the thing. And it's apparently an AMC streaming app. And if you subscribe to that, then on Sunday, June 13th, you can catch the first two episodes of Kevin Can F Himself, which stars Emmy winner Annie Murphy. And I want to say that I think this is probably one of the finest shows I've seen this year.
Awesome.
She is this. If Schitt's Creek introduced the world to her, this should make her a star. It is fantastic. And I've read some early reviews and there's a lot of criticisms about it. And I'm like, Brian Cranston did the exact same thing in Breaking Bad. And y'all thought that he was genius. Now she's doing this and it's all of a sudden like nobody's saying she's bad, but the critics are mixed on the show. I think it's great. I think it just it's fantastic.
The first person who's like, I miss Alexis Rose is gonna get like neck punched. Like,
yeah, and that's one thing I'm so impressed by her performance because I was afraid that we were going to see glimpses of Alexis, like look facial twitches or something like that, just how physical she is in that show. None of that is here. None of it. It is a totally completely different performance. I'm very excited for you to see it, both of you. Anyway, does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3M's contributors, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant mañana.